Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening. On today's show, I'll speak with journalist, podcast, and public radio host Meghna Chakrabarty. Meghna is the host of On Point, a national public radio show that covers important and timely topics. You can hear On Point Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. on 91.9 KVCR. In September, On Point converted to a one-hour show and is no longer a call-in show. Meghna talks about that transition, her background in journalism, and her passion for doing what she does. My interview with Meghna is from September of last year, just before the changes to On Point took effect. Here's my conversation with Meghna Chakrabarty. Welcome to Lifestyles.
Hi, Lillian.
You know, it wasn't that long ago when the plans for On Point were that you would host 4 days and David Folkenflik would host on Fridays. What happened there?
Well, I think what happened is that the whole world changed, really, with the pandemic, with American politics. And we really got the feeling looking around that we needed to do the best that we could to meet listeners where they are and to go deeper with the time that we had. And so we thought that meeting those goals required a pretty big change, and that's what we did. This is where we are now.
You were a producer and director for On Point before sitting in the host seat, which was previously hosted by Tom Ashbrook. When you were producing and directing, did you say to yourself, I can do that?
That is a great question. Do you know, you're the first person to ever have asked me that. And after all these years, really, you are the first person. So what happened was I didn't necessarily say, oh, I could do that, because I learned a great deal from Tom, and I thought he was a fabulous host. And so I wasn't so presumptuous as to think that I could just jump in and do that kind of work immediately. But what I did know for sure was that I wanted to be on the air, and I wanted to take the work that I was doing as a producer, that all important work that producers do, and I wanted to then take it to that next step and help be part of the finished product and be on the air and do the reporting and ask the questions that I was asking offline on the air. So I guess I said I wanted to do that, but I think more accurately it was more like, I want to try to be able to do that.
Before hosting On Point, you were the host of Boston's public radio show, the award-winning Boston Radio, and you were the fill-in for Here and Now, also produced in Boston, which had national coverage. But taking On Point, it was all you, and of course the team behind you and behind the mic, but it was all you nationwide. How was that for you?
It was thrilling, really thrilling, because you mentioned two shows that I worked on that are Boston-based, and I'm really proud of the work that I was able to do with both of those programs. And maybe we can talk about Radio Boston a little bit more, too. Near and dear to my heart is the importance of local coverage. I could talk with you till we're blue in the face about that. But the reason why On Point was thrilling is because even though I've been in Boston for quite some time, I grew up on the West Coast. I grew up in Oregon. And so I never saw all my journalism at all through just like a Boston lens. And being able to engage with topics and people and ideas really deeply throughout the course of an hour and hear what people from around the country thought about those topics and ideas was really very, very exciting to me because, again, I don't see everything through a Boston lens, and being able to be connected to Americans from different backgrounds, different places in the country was and still is a thrill.
Yeah, with Boston, it would be a little more refined to the Boston area compared to going nationwide and covering all the blue and red states. Definitely has a different feel. With On Point going to 1 hour, what will be the focus of the 1 hour? What's the change? What's going to be different? Or is it all going to be the same? It's just going to be 1 hour.
No, there will be some subtle changes and some overt ones, not so subtle changes. I mean, I think the most not so subtle change is that we're not going to take callers anymore. And this was that was something we had to talk a lot about, because in wanting to be connected to the whole country, callers are a great way to do that.
Yeah.
But the reason why we decided to step away from that form of hearing from Americans was a couple reasons. One is that you know, callers are people who want to call us. There are folks who listen and want to be heard,
right.
And that's not everyone.
Right.
So we thought this was an opportunity to actually be even more intentional in reaching out to voices that maybe don't get heard that often. So that's one thing. The second thing is, and this is to be quite frank, speaking to from one public radio host to another, is that we wanted to be able to put a show out that any station in the country at any time during the day could broadcast. And I told you how I grew up in Oregon. Like, I really, really, really want our program to be relevant to people on the West Coast, people in California, people, you know, in the Mountain West, everywhere. And by being a live talk show, a live call-in show, we just couldn't do that. And I don't blame any station for saying, well, I couldn't take the old On Point because they were always putting that number out and my listeners could never call in. That's like the biggest not so subtle change. I would say the other major change that we're doing is that the show used to be a host, me, talking from top to bottom, like all live, all conversation. Now, the magic and analysis and deep insight that can come through live conversation is still the heart of the show, but we're now supplementing that with either reported pieces or highly produced radio pieces that bring in those additional voices like I was talking about, so that we can use those stories and that really intimate form of radio storytelling to then give us a platform to jump off of and dive deeper into the conversational part of the show. We're trying to have the best of both worlds in terms of what produced radio can bring and what live conversation can bring.
Got it. That makes sense. So here in the Inland Empire in Southern California, we carry the show, but you're right, our listeners could never call in. And call-ins, sometimes when I've hosted my call-in shows, it kind of stretches or it brings a little more, obviously, more voices to the microphone. But I always get anxious when I hear you just taking a call right before you're going to go to a break and the music's playing. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, he's going to have to cut them off. And that is, to me, one of the hardest things to do. What's it like for you?
It does always make me feel not anxious so much, but I just don't want people to think that I'm ever being arbitrary, right?
Yeah.
Because we really, you know how this feels. Like, we want to hear from everyone. We want to give everyone their fair time and fair say. But ultimately, the clock is this unforgiving presence in my life. And I've got to just say, hang on here for a second. You know, ask them if they can come back on the other side of the break. It is nerve-wracking, to say the least. But every time that happens, I always tell myself, well, Magna, there's one area to work on. Like, just get better at timing when you bring this person on the air so that you don't have to cut them off so much. But it's like a dance. And sometimes I step on my partner's foot in the dance.
That's so true. My guest is Magna Chakrabarty. She is the host of On Point, which can be heard each weekday morning on KVCR at 9 a.m. You graduated summa cum laude from Oregon State, and this is where you guys always say, go Beavers, right?
Go Beavers, you bet.
With degrees in civil and environmental engineering, and then you went on to get your master's degree in environmental science at Harvard. Did you plan to be a reporter when you were working on your science-related degrees?
Never. It was not in my field of imagination. It's funny because I was always interested in writing and photography and journalism because what I was doing on the side while I was getting my science degrees, in retrospect, like in high school, I was doing the yearbook, in college, working on college newspapers. And so maybe if I had actually paid closer attention to what I was doing in my free time, my educational path would have been different. But I never actually thought it would be a career. It was just something that I enjoyed doing because it was another way of just being a continuous student of the world. And then after I got my master's degree, I kind of had a personal reckoning and said, well, you know what? If I'm not passionate about practicing science, but I'm passionate about learning it, maybe I ought to rethink sort of what my next step is going to be. And that's what happened.
Will you share what your dad said about scientists and sleeping?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you bet. So my parents are very profoundly influential figures in my life. And I come from a very scientific family. I think I might be the only one of my cousins who doesn't have a PhD. So I'm like the black sheep of the
slacker
family. So a long time ago, my dad told me, you know, he was talking about why he loves science so much. And he said, you know, like if when you're doing an experiment and you're thinking through what you're hypothesis of the experiment is going to be or how you're going to test it, if it doesn't keep you up at night thinking about it and you're excited the next morning to jump into the lab, maybe science isn't for you, because things that like possess your soul with excitement, they ought to keep you up at night. And he said, that's what it takes to do great science. Now, I was a kid when he said that. I get it. Like, be excited, and, like, do great science. But later on, I figured out that when I was doing my science degrees, as I said, I was interested in learning about them and the concepts and the way it helps us understand how the world works. But I wasn't being kept up at night by it. And that's when I realized, like, oh, you know what? My dad was telling me something about passion and to really pursue your passions, the things that possess your soul so much that you just can't wait to get out of bed the next day. And it wasn't, just happened to not be strictly science practice at that time. And that is actually the reason why, when I realized that I decided I needed to make a change.
Is it difficult sometimes when you have your own personal opinions of something and it disagrees terribly with a guest you might be hosting and you do your best to stay neutral? Or how does that feel for you?
I would say that it's not difficult because I believe it's one of our core duties. Look, we're living in a world where I'm an American, I'm a citizen, I'm a human, so everyone has their own approaches and beliefs, and so do I. But when I think to myself, okay, what is my duty here as a journalist engaging in this conversation with that person? My duty is to, one of the things is to try to understand where they're coming from. And so, in fact, in a lot of my preparation, Lillian, what I do is I try to first and foremost read articles or research from publications or writers that might be presenting points of view that I don't come by so naturally myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that I actually front load my preparation with that to be sure that, out of fairness, those views get represented. That's one of the things I do. And then the other thing is, like, I try to remember constantly. I'm like, well, what's the purpose? The purpose is to understand where that person is coming from, to understand the reasons by which they have come to their conclusions. And especially if it's, you know, just a regular American who's sharing their story with us. If it's a political figure or a person in power, well, then also we have to ask, okay, so based on these points of view that you have, do you understand, here's the impact the decisions that you've made on behalf of us all have had? So, like, let's talk about those impacts. I don't need to bring in my personal perspective on that at all, because we have evidence. It doesn't matter what party the person's from, we have evidence, the impact their decisions have had. So
right.
That's kind of how I try to approach it. The duty is not for me to say, like, here's what I think.
Right, of course.
The duty is for me to, say, well, so tell me why you think what you think.
After a quick break, Meghna shares who she'd like to interview, the hardest things about her job, and her family life. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. What's the experience for your family, for your kids, during this pandemic?
It's really scary because you don't know who's going to get it and you don't know when you will have it.
I miss my friends and my teacher, but I do the Zoom meetings in the morning and then I see them.
Let's explore the world we're living in together, On Point.
If you're just joining us, my guest is journalist and the host of On Point, Meghna Chakrabarty. On Point can be heard on KVCR weekday mornings at 9. One of my most favorite interviews you did was with a comedian. It was with Patton Oswalt. It was a serious topic, but it was inspiring and funny, and I got to hear a more lighthearted side of you, which I really enjoyed. What topics do you enjoy most?
I loved talking to him.
It was great. It was a great hour.
Because he was so human, right?
Yeah.
And so funny. What do I most enjoy? I love talking to, this is a hard question, Lillian. You think I would have a good answer by now? I'll tell you what. It's not so much the topic, but I love talking to people who are maybe like the best at what they do, no matter what it is. It could be sports. It could be science. It could be art. It could be, a teenager who's just amazing at poetry, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The people of passion who are like, I am dedicating this part of my life to this one thing in particular, and here's why it's amazing. Like, I just love talking to people like that. So that's across all all subjects. But I also love, look, I'll always love talking about science because that will never leave me. Comedians are wonderful because we all need to laugh.
But you know,
boy,
sometimes,
did I ever need to laugh.
Sometimes comedians are hard to interview. They're a challenge. I've interviewed several. He was very good and he had a passion and you guys rolled together well. But sometimes comedians are difficult to get them to open up and to talk to you. And I like to ask a lot of questions. Sometimes they're hard.
Oh, yeah. No, can I just tell you quickly?
Like, sure.
You're exactly right. I once did an interview, this was a long time ago, before On Point, with Mindy Kaling. And I thought we had a lot in common because, you know, she grew up in this part of the country. Obviously, she's South Asian American. But she was, I try to make it a point never to try to be funny during an interview, especially with a comedian, because that's their job. And
right.
I'm not funny myself. But she was, I wanted to get her to talk a little bit about her mother, because her mother had passed away. And it was, and I thought we could really learn something about her from that, but she was not going to play. And that year, it was challenging, so I know exactly what you mean. And you kind of just have to come up with a different line of questioning right on the spot. And I'm not sure if I pulled that one off.
Yeah, you kind of have to pivot quick to keep it going, because you still have, you know, 12 more minutes to fill. Let me reintroduce our guest is Meghna Chakrabarty, the host of On Point, heard weekday mornings here at 9. Who would you like to interview that you haven't had the opportunity yet? And what would be the first question? I'm sure you've thought about this. I know I've thought about this. But who would it be for you?
Oh, my gosh. I'm actually dying to know what your answer is to that question.
No, you go first.
Who would I like to interview but haven't yet? Gosh. It's just that there's so many people. I'm going to just give one name out right now. She's on my list of many, mostly because we're all thinking about the Supreme Court.
Right.
I have never had a chance to interview Justice Sotomayor. Mm. In fact, I've only had a chance to interview one sitting Supreme Court justice. I think she's a really fascinating person, obviously a brilliant lawyer, and a really warm person in the interviews I've seen. Mm. So I'd love to talk with her. And I think right now, the one question that I would ask, actually the one question I'm most interested in anybody who comes on our show, is what are your hopes and dreams for this country for the next 4 years? I've almost asked a form of that question on the show like almost every day in some capacity. So hearing someone like Justice Sotomayor answer that, I think would be very enlightening.
Just a reminder, this interview was recorded last September, shortly after the passing of U.S. Supreme Court Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I asked Meghna to share her thoughts about Ginsburg.
Well, obviously, she was a towering historical figure, a towering legal figure who very brilliantly said, if you look inside the Constitution of the United States itself, there is ample evidence of the legal equality of men and women in this country. You know, for that, I think we're, as a nation, forever grateful to her. Obviously, depending on one's legal approach, you could take issue with some of her decisions or dissents as she served on the Supreme Court.
Right.
But just today, I talked with people who used to be her colleagues and even a federal judge who was inspired by her. And I think the common theme in terms of why they respected her in particular was that they said she was a cautious and careful legal scholar who really sought to find the commonalities between groups of Americans that were supported by the law. And I thought that was so interesting, right? Because we tend to think of her as the great dissenter, right, who was always standing up and saying no. But they said if you really look at her career, you actually see a legal mind trying to find the connections between people, which was really, really interesting.
I know. I heard the show and I was a driveway moment because I had to get to work, but I stayed in my car, then rushed into my office so I could hear the rest of it. It was good. What's the hardest thing about your job and what's the best thing about your job?
The hardest thing, two hardest things. One is just keeping up.
Yeah.
As you know, I feel like every day is a fire hose day. And there's so much happening. And so much that feels very important to deeply understand. Keeping up is really, really hard. And I try to maintain a healthy and balanced life away from work. I've got two kids and I really want to be the best mama I can to them. So that means stepping away from the never-ending jet stream of news. And I'm always constantly worried that there's something important I've missed, or something that I don't quite have a handle on. So that's the hardest thing. And the best thing is to be able to feel like when we do it right, when we've had a show that a listener feels like it was worth an hour of their lives, which is a lot. We're asking people for a lot. But when we do it right and people come away and say, I understand my country better today. Mm. When I get, in whatever way that might be, when I get emails like that, then I think I am so lucky to be able to have a job where every once in a while people feel that way, that we're being of a particular kind of service. Those are the days I'm like walking on cloud nine.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Your bio says, which I thought was really sweet, that you are the mother of two bright sparks and that you are the lucky spouse of a patient man. Why is a patient man so important in your world?
Oh, my goodness. Because I'm kind of an intense human. And
no, really?
That intensity is an authentic one, as you might tell. And so it comes home, too. And I try to do too much. And I think that my husband, I know that my husband has seen through the more challenging parts of the life I'm trying to live and seen to the core of me. And he has been patient through all of that, through the ups and downs. And he's been my singular cheerleader for 20 years. I've known him for 20 years. We haven't been married for that, the entirety of that time. And it's amazing. Oh my God. It's so amazing how supportive he's been, how he's always been there by my side, even when I didn't, especially when I didn't believe in myself, he believed in me. I would not be where I am today. There's no possible way if it weren't for him, because he's also been an amazing dad for all the times where I said, I just need to step away from being a mom at this moment and following this story that I'm working on. I have to do this right now. And he has always stepped in and carried the load for our family.
It's nice to have one of those, isn't it?
I pinch myself and count my lucky stars every day.
I have one too. And I have a child with special needs. So, I get it. Yeah, nice. All right. What do you enjoy doing when you're not in the studio or researching for a new segment or an upcoming guest? What do you like to do?
I love being outside. I love being in nature, hiking around. So any chance I can get to enjoy the spectacular beauty of the United States in any way, shape, or form, I love that. And my husband and I like to cook together a lot. I'm starting to read, trying to do a little two-person book club with me and my daughter, read the books that she's reading. And cleaning our house, I mean, like, honestly, just cleaning our condo and trying to impose order amongst the chaos in the chaos of life, like, that just gives me a lot of peace, just trying to impose a little order in my life. And even if it's just, like, with a tidy bathroom, then I feel like that day is a win.
Okay, is Boston what you consider home, even though you grew up in Oregon?
Oh, I love this question. That's such a good question. 50% yes is what I would answer. because growing up in Oregon, I will always be profoundly connected to the Pacific Northwest of this country. And at the same time, look, like, Bostonians, they're like, they look at you and they're like, okay, either, you know, if your family hasn't been here since the indigenous peoples of this country were first here, then your scratch will scratch you out. And if your family also hasn't been here for, like, you know, several generations post-colonial, will scratch you out. So, like, I think, like, I'm going to have to be here for, like, another 200 years before I'm actually considered a Bostonian. However, I still do. I really do love living here. And I think I've grown on Boston, and Boston's grown on me, too. So 50-50. I'm split. Okay. I'm a split personality on this.
Why is public radio the outlet or the medium you choose to work in?
Because it's for the public. And I very strongly believe that having as much independence as we have by virtue of not having to worry about commercials or corporate ownership gives us a mandate and an ability to really go deeply into the issues that matter for us, whether it's nationally or locally, in a way that isn't being done anywhere else. And I just really, really believe in the importance of a well-informed public and high-quality information for that citizenry. And I can't really right now imagine doing that to the level that I want and the depth that I believe in. I can't imagine doing that anywhere else.
Are you a public radio member?
I am. I was actually, my first ever experience in public radio was when I was a grad student. And at that point in time, I didn't really have enough money to give as a member. So I came in to WBUR, actually, and volunteered my time and answered phones for a fundraiser. And since then, I have been a member for the other station here in Boston and as well. So yes, I am. Got to put my money where my mouth is. The best thing about public radio are member stations. And I'm saying that as a person who spent a decade in local journalism. No one loves your community more, because they're your neighbors, they're your friends, than the people who work at your public radio station. But no one knows your community better and feels a passion for helping us understand each other. And local journalism has been on, writ large, has been on life support in this country for a long time, but there's no more important form of journalism in this country. And so I would ask that whatever people can do to support the great work being done through their local public radio stations there in California, it's money that goes to support them. It goes to support you and your community. And I can't think of a better way for however much you can give for that money to be put to work for you, because local really, really matters.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been great speaking with you. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you. You're a fantastic interviewer. So your listeners, they already knew what I just found out. So it's been a real pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. To learn more about Meghna Chakrabarty, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on today's show. That's our show for this week. To hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You can also listen to Lifestyles on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Search for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez on your streaming service and take the show on the go. Lifestyles is now on Facebook. Search for us online at 919-LIFESTYLES and give us a like. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including Sharita Wadd, David Fleming, Sean Houlihan, Andrew Caravella, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Bortnick. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.